We kick things off by talking some baseball here this afternoon. The Red Sox take on the White Sox tonight. Joe Kelly, Jeff Samardzija, the scheduled starters. You'll hear the game here in the Pulse, AM 620 WZOM. But we want to focus on Red Sox futures right now as we're joined on the Tiller and Rye telephone line by our friend Chris Hatfield of SoxProspects.com. Chris, good afternoon.
Hey, Rich, how are you? It's kind of ironic. My wife and her family are in Bar Harbor right now, but I'm stuck down here at work. So I guess this is the closest I'm getting to Maine this week, unfortunately.
Wow. Somebody got the better deal there, Chris.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know. It might be me, Rich. I love talking to you, so I'll take it.
Okay, all right. Well, we hope this is the highlight of your work week then.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it can't get much better. You know?
Well, let's talk first about some of the young guys who are with the parent club and showing some progress. It's been a remarkable few weeks for Jackie Bradley Jr., and by all accounts, a really good young guy. It has to make people happy to see what he's been able to do.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because it seemed like he got this rep last year that he was uncoachable when, you know, from when the time he was drafted all the way up through the system, he had the exact opposite reputation. That seemed to really come out of nowhere and just kind of be a offshoot of, well, he's not hitting well, he must not be listening to what the coaches are telling him. I don't really know where that came from, but it's good to see him succeeding. You know, like you said, by all accounts, he's a great guy. And I'm really interested to see what Dave Dombrowski and whoever they bring in as the GM plan to do with the outfield next year, because the Hanley Ramirez and left field experiment really hasn't worked. And I've said this on Twitter, I'm really intrigued by a Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley, Rusne Castillo outfield. I think pretty much nothing would fall in that outfield. It would be outstanding defensively. And Bradley, as good as he is defensively, he really doesn't need to hit this well. You know, I'm not quite sure he's going to keep this up. Well, he pretty much can't unless he's Mike Trout, basically. But he doesn't need to do this in order to be an extremely valuable player. As long as he can hit enough to maintain a spot even near the bottom of the lineup, he's going to be a very valuable player, especially if they put him in center field, which is what I would like to see them do. Well, as good as Mookie Betts has been.
And there were some doubts about Rusne Castillo, but we have to forget he hadn't played a lot of baseball in the last year or so, and now he's coming around and certainly holding his own at the major league level.
He really is, and you know, it's not like when the Red Sox gave him the contract they did, they were head and shoulders above what everybody else was offering Castillo. You know, it's not like it kind of came out of nowhere for them to give him the contract he received. And the fact that he's coming around now, it makes sense. You know, he had some time off, as happens with some of these Cuban imports. You know, some of them are Jose Abreu, and they start hitting pretty much from the get-go, and you know, Yasiel Puig is another example of a guy who maybe had a quicker adjustment period, but you know, Castillo, he was never supposed to be as good as those two, so it makes sense that he also might have a little more trouble adjusting. And again, you know, with what they're paying him, it may seem like it's this unseemly amount, but you know, $10.5 million in the first 3 years, or sorry, in yeah, first 3 years of the deal, this year and then the next 2 years, and then $11 million the two following years, he really doesn't have to do that much to justify that money. That's not money that leads to him needing to be an all-star to justify it. So he very well could justify that money if he's playing like he is now.
Absolutely. And on the pitching side of things, been pleasantly surprised by the work of Henry Owens so far.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. Internally, we've taken this year to this system where we update our rankings every month, and what it is the four of us who are kind of the main ownership of the site submit our personal lists, and we average them and kind of have it out as to where guys should move. And the Henry Owens-Brian Johnson comparison all year has been a point of contention for the four of us, and I've had Henry Owens higher throughout just because I think his ceiling is so much higher than Brian Johnson's, and it's a tough comparison right now with Johnson hurt. But that's the thing with Owens, was the questions were fastball command and can he develop a third pitch. It looks like he's not only developed a third pitch, he might have a fourth pitch with how successful he's been with both his slider and his curveball. You know, his changeup has long been his best pitch, and arguably it hasn't even been his best pitch in the majors. You know, he's been getting swings and misses on all four of his offerings, and that's an incredible development for him. If that's for real and not just a matter of hitters not being familiar with his stuff, that makes him potentially a number three, maybe even a number two starter in the majors. We've always liked his ceiling. It was just a question of whether he'd get there. And, I'd like to see him maybe continue this a little longer, maybe do it next season as well to make sure it's for real. And like I said, not a matter of hitters not being familiar with his stuff yet, but it's been a great start for him. And he's showing maturity. You know, he had that outing, I think it was the last time out or the one before, where he gave up seven runs, I think it was, in the first three innings, and he came back to pitch six or seven innings. That's not something you see a lot of guys who are rookies do, and the fact that he was able to stay in a game, give his team some innings, it just shows the pitchability and the maturity that he has, even as a guy who was drafted out of high school and has made it to the majors relatively quickly.
We're talking with Chris Hatfield of SoxProspects.com. Well, let's look at the minor league system, and maybe nobody is generating more excitement there than Yoan Moncada, who has just been going crazy lately. 40 stolen bases, a .292 overall average. My goodness, this guy's turning some heads.
Well, and you know, it's funny, I'll even expand that. That entire lineup in Greenville, it contains Yoan Moncada and Rafael Devers, we actually have Devers ranked higher than Moncada. Devers is in a little bit of a slump right now, but they're basically 1 and 1A in the system. And they recently just got Andrew Benintendi. We broke the promotion last week that Benintendi was getting promoted from Lowell to Greenville. And between him, who he's the first-round pick this year, and shortstop Javier Guerra, that's four of the top eight prospects in the system, and it might be, when we adjust our rankings for August 1st, it might be four of the top six or seven guys in the system. Moncada is really starting to show what got him the bonus that he signed for back in February. He's, adjustment period for a Cuban player who hadn't played in a long time, and recently he's just been absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. He's showing that he's a potential, maybe not five above average tools, because the fielding really isn't quite there yet. I think where he's going to play in the long run is a bit of a question. He's been playing second base this year. He's been a little rough around the edges there, but he's got the tools. He's got a good arm. I wonder if we might see him in the outfield or maybe at third base down the line, but that's a question you could answer in double and triple A. Next year, I think he's going to start in Salem, but he's got the potential to move very quickly if he's succeeding the way he is this year. The thing is, the Greenville Drive are in a playoff chase right now, and Salem, Portland, and Pawtucket are all pretty very much out of the playoff hunt. So I think we're going to see those guys stay in Greenville rather than get promoted this year, just so they can have that experience of a playoff chase and maybe playoff games. But next year, he's got the potential to move very, very quickly, and I could see maybe the end of next year, but more likely beginning of 2017, mid-2017, he might be in Fenway. Well, again, the question of where he's going to play is something that's up in the air. They'll have to figure that out.
Well, when you talk about those four talented guys from Greenville, Benintendi's the old man of the group at 21.
It's kind of funny, right? And it's interesting because he was a draft-eligible college sophomore this year. You have to be a junior to be drafted out of college, but if you turn 21 before a certain date, I'm admittedly not quite sure what the date is. I think it might be mid-July because he turned 21 July 6th. You can be drafted as a sophomore. And Benintendi, the only reason he didn't go higher than seventh overall where the Red Sox picked him this year was just the fact that as a freshman, he really didn't do all that much at Arkansas. But this year, he was the best player in college baseball. He won, I think, four National Player of the Year awards. And he just was absolutely tearing the cover off the ball in Lowell when he got promoted. He's got seven home runs. He had seven home runs in 35 games in Lowell, and I think he's got two already in five games in Greenville. So he and Moncada are basically the guys battling for our August Player of the Month. I think I just realized I said August 1st earlier. I meant September 1st. But, it's going to be interesting to see what the rest of the month holds, which one of those two guys takes our Player of the Month award. But he's showing he can hit with wood, which is something that was a question because he didn't play last summer because he was hurt. He had a leg injury of some sort. And basically not playing last summer allowed him to get bigger, get stronger, and now he's suddenly, for a guy who's very small, he's listed at 5'10", but we don't even think he's that big based on having seen him in person. He generates an awful lot of power from a smaller frame. It'll be interesting to see if he can continue to do that all the way up. As an advanced college hitter, he should have dominated Lowell the way he did, and the fact that he's having success in Greenville isn't surprising. Next year, he'll start in Salem, or I could even see him starting in Portland, to be perfectly honest, depending on what they see from him in the Fall Instructional League, where I'm assuming they'll send him, and based on what they see from him in spring training. If he does start in Salem, he'll certainly be in Portland by the end of the year, so everybody up in Maine will be able to check him out at some point in 2016.
And Portland fans have also had a chance to see another talented young outfielder, the guy you have rated number three in your prospect list.
Yeah, Manuel Margot, it's kind of interesting. He seems to be this forgotten guy because you have these groups of the young pitchers who are basically in Boston or on the DL in the case of Brian Johnson. Or, you know, there's the Greenville lineup, which is kind of, frankly, the Greenville lineup is making national waves. But, yeah, Margot seems to be getting lost in the flow a little bit. He's been doing very well for a guy his age. He's 20 years old. His 1994 birthday, but it's in September, so he'll turn 21 this coming September. And, yeah, in Portland, in 50 games, he's hitting only .249, but, you know, he's stolen 16 bases, and he's got 16 doubles in 50 games. He's, you know, been fighting it a little bit. He's not dominating the level, but he's certainly holding his own for his age. He's extremely young for the league. I think he might be the youngest or second youngest hitter. I think the youngest hitter is actually J.P. Crawford, of a shortstop from the Phillies organization, who's one of the top five prospects in baseball. Frankly, evaluators consider him to be up there with Devers and Moncada, the two top guys in Greenville right now. He's been a consensus top 50 midseason prospect list guy, and I'm assuming he'll be there this offseason as well. It's interesting because with the outfield the Red Sox have right now in Boston with Bradley, Castillo, and Betts, and then, of course, what are you going to do with Hanley Ramirez? It would seem like Margot might be trade bait. There's a reason he was kind of thrown around in potential Cole Hamels deals, and I wonder if the Red Sox might dangle him as trade bait this offseason just because the fit into the lineup doesn't seem to work. But even if he does wind up making it up to Boston, he's an extremely intriguing power speed guy who plays great defense in center. So, you know, kind of a embarrassment of riches. And he's part of why the Red Sox have what pretty much everyone's saying is the best minor league system in the game right now. So there's a lot to be excited about down there with Margot.
Chris, before we let you go back to the parent club for a moment, where did this power come from with Travis Shaw?
You know, it's interesting with Shaw because when he was in the Arizona Fall League, I think it was a couple, it might have been last offseason, I can look it up real quick, but it didn't seem like entering the Arizona Fall League in 2014, yeah, that he was much of a power guy, or 2013, sorry, but then this TrackMan data that they have now where they have exit velocities, this is kind of the new frontier of baseball stats. Where they measure the velocity of the ball coming off of the bat. He wound up near the top of the leaderboards for the Arizona Fall League for that, which is typically where you see a lot of, you know, really top prospects. And all of a sudden, Travis Shaw's got six home runs in 27 games in Boston now that he's getting a shot. It seems to come in waves with him, and he's just seeing the ball really well right now. I'm still not necessarily convinced he can keep it up over a longer season before, again, you know, I mentioned it with Owens, with hitters being familiar with him. Well, it goes in the converse, where pitchers maybe aren't quite familiar with Travis Shaw's strengths and weaknesses quite yet. You know, we saw that last year with Xander Bogaerts and, you know, a little bit with Mookie Betts, where pitchers learned how to pitch them and it was tough for them to really get going. With Shaw, you know, he's not a Mookie Betts or a Xander Bogaerts. To me, he seems like his best fit as a guy who can also play third base very well, might be on the bench as a guy who gets 200, 300 at-bats, playing first base and third base, and I'd like to see them teach him how to play left field as a potential, you know, left fielder when, you know, they need to fill in or when the pitching matchup is right, just to get his bat into the lineup. But, yeah, he's been kind of a revelation in what he's doing in the majors this year, and I think he can be a really valuable piece with some versatility defensively next year and, you know, down the line if they can figure out a good spot for him in that, on that roster.
Chris Hatfield with SoxProspects.com. Chris is not exactly Bar Harbor, but much less traffic here on the phone.
That's true. That's very true. It's nice when you've got a metro commuter, though. The D.C. metro might be worse than traffic on some days, so I really should knock on wood right now, because my commute home is probably going to take about an hour and a half now that I said that.
I'm sorry to hear that. Hope I didn't jinx you.
It's all right.
All right, Chris, as always, great talking with you. We'll catch up again soon.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Rich. Take care.
Chris Hatfield, SoxProspects.com, or Boston Insiders, brought to you by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength, online at crossagency.com. Steve?